Session number 30020, reel 4.
For how long were you positioned in the War Office?
For how long was I?
In the War Office.
9 months.
And then you were stationed back in Dover after that?
And I was sent as an IG to Dover. That would have been 1943. Probably later in 1943. You know, Roy was talking about the Shard, Halston and Eisenhower. In one of those books there, it tells you when they went through the Channel, if that's any interest, but as they did. Yeah, I was there for 9 months. Which, under the circumstances, was really quite useful. But apart from the fact I was there, I sometimes really wonder what I was doing or what anyone was doing there, but I suppose we must have had a purpose. And that was that. But then you think about that with a lot of the things you were doing during the war, as I was, say, you know, static troops. Anti-aircraft didn't really have much of a role after the early days of the war.
Did it? While you were at Dover, did you receive much attention from...
Did
the guns receive much attention from German aircraft?
No. I never recollect anything happening. I don't even remember any air raids during the period I was there. I mean, by that time, don't forget, we'd had the Battle of Britain, which we'd won. We had command of the skies. There was no doubt about that. I don't remember any air raids later on. I certainly don't remember any air raids at Dover. I'll tell you, the only thing we did have were the V1s coming over. They did come over and you could hear them buzz. And there were anti-aircraft batteries along the coast. I remember there was an American anti-aircraft battery up towards Folkestone, which fired at the V1s coming over. And I think they were the first people to use proximity fuses. They had proximity fuses, which if they got somewhere near the target, they went off. I think they were probably quite good, but they came over. They didn't fall on Dover. They were going probably up to London.
What sort of protection did the coastal guns have? What sort of protection did the coastal guns have?
I don't think they had any protection. I don't remember any of our guns having protection. Not in the sense that the German guns had protection. They never had anything like... Well, I think I showed you the picture of our 18-inch guns under camouflage netting. They certainly didn't have 6 inch of concrete on top of them. And you can go and see that today. If you go to Cap Grisnez, you can go to the museum, Batteries Tote, and you can see exactly what the composition of those batteries was. But of course the guns have gone, the guns have been taken away. Whereas my pictures show them with the guns intact.
How much of a threat were the guns, the German guns across the Channel considered?
I can't see there were any threat at all because they didn't do anything. They were just a damn nuisance. And I mean, all they really did was to, as I say, fired into Dover if we fired across the Channel. And the only time we really fired across the Channel was at enemy shipping. I mean, there was no purpose in us firing across the Channel at the German guns. I mean, it was a waste of ammunition. They might have found it the same. It wasn't going to do anything. I mean, we weren't trying to repel anything, nor were they. I mean, by the time I was there, our sole use really was to stop enemy shipping going through the Channel. And that didn't happen all that much. But when it did, we were quite good at it. No, I can't remember. I can't remember any bombs, shall we say, falling on Dover. And I certainly don't recollect any German gunfire directed towards our batteries in Dover, or just outside Dover.
Presumably, though, you knew the locations of the guns.
We knew the locations of the guns. They'd all got numbers, and they'd been plotted. We knew where they all were. I mean, if we didn't know, the RAF reconnaissance would have given us all the details. I mean, if need be, but the only time we really had recourse to the RAF was who told us what the movements of German shipping were.
How well did the relationship between the coastal batteries and the RAF work?
Well, as far as that was concerned, I suppose if the RAF flew over, as I say, in Havre and said a German cargo ship has just come into Havre, they would make a note of that and they would tell our ops room. I don't think it was a question of doing it in any other way, probably than... I don't know quite what they did. I mean, I don't think they had to give us radio messages or anything of that kind necessarily. They probably came and told us. But I don't know. I'm not really certain. But I mean, okay, they gave us the information. Now, if we wanted naval information, the naval had an ops room which was adjacent to us. So you could walk through the door and discuss things if you wish to. I mean, if the Navy had an advanced information about a flotilla of E-boats or something crossing the channel, which the RAF probably would not have had, they could have come and told us and give us warning. But I don't remember that happening very often. I think I was too late over there at that time. Anything of that kind would have probably happened earlier in the war, when there was probably more activity in the channel. Yeah. You know, it seems to me you spend a jolly long time there to shoot at one ship almost.
Would you be able to describe the ops room?
Describe
the ops room.
I beg your pardon, I'm sorry, do you know, my hearing isn't as good as it might be.
Would you be able to describe the operations room?
Our operations room? Well, yes, I suppose I've been there. There was always someone on duty there. If there was something brewing, like the RAF telling us the Munster land has left harbour, then obviously the officer commanding, that was Brigadier Law, would have been told, because he was in charge and he would have to give orders of engagement, that sort of thing. And then what happened? I mean, we had an operations table, we had ATS plotters, and if something was coming up like that, it would be put on the operations table and moved along accordingly to what information we got in from radar, if it was at night, or sight during the daytime. Moved along so we could see where it was, but I don't know how relevant that really became, because in the end everything depended, particularly at night time, and these movements were at night time latterly, depended upon radar, and the radar was giving us the information anyway. When the Scharnhorst etc. came up through the channel, that was a daylight, they came up through a daylight, and well, they just took a chance and went through and they got away with it. Because they weren't... Well, we heard from Roy that they were hit by a 9-2 shell. I don't know quite what he was really going on about, but anyway. He'd read something in the RAF journal, which I probably hadn't. But anyway, they went through the channel and they weren't disturbed, they weren't checked. I say one was hit and it probably had superficial damage and that's about all. The torpedoes missed, and they got away with it. I think they knew that they had to do it then, because if they left it any later, the 18-inch guns would the 15-inch guns would have been in operation, and they might well have stopped them. Let's be fair. Shall we say they should have been able to stop them? It didn't happen. They they went in before the guns came into operation. But I wasn't there then.
Well, you mentioned the relative lack of action. Did that have any effect on the morale?
I don't think so. No. Because we hadn't... I was just thinking, I mean, the batteries outside Dover, which I was more concerned with, they all functioned, they were just there. It wasn't an active role. They had to be there. They had to be alert. They had to be ready to engage should something happen. But let's be fair, nothing happened. I know of no occasion during the time I was either serving on the northeast coast or Dover where any of the other batteries, the smaller batteries outside Dover, had any occasion to do anything at all. But they were there. And the only ones which ever really did anything, as I've told you, were the batteries at Hartlepool during the First World War. They had occasion to do something, and their role was very important, and they did it. But it didn't happen anywhere else. No one ever came to shell any of the other installations. I mean, ports and docks up the coast, particularly in the more industrial areas like Teesside and that sort of thing, had to be protected, and they had batteries there to protect them. But they weren't attacked. In any case, by the time of this war, I was thinking if they wanted to attack them, it would be much easier to attack them with aircraft. I don't think sending ships over was quite all necessary. But it was different in the First World War, wasn't it?
What did you get in the way of leave?
What?
What did you get in the way of leave?
I would say normal leave. How long it was, I don't know. But I mean, we'd have had, 10 days, something like that. When the train passed to get home. You see, that's something we could have, which is probably more than someone could have had if they were operating in the field, because they weren't in a position to come home. Yes, we did have leave.
Did you normally go home to your parents?
I just went home to, by that time, if there was a question of leave, my wife would have been living in our house in Berkhamsted, and I'd have just gone home. And that was all it was. And of course, she probably tended to come to where I was stationed more earlier in the war than she did towards the end of the war. When I was at Dover, I believe she came down for some function, which I've forgotten what it was. My parents probably looked after the children, and I've forgotten, but I mean, otherwise she did not really come down to anywhere down at Dover. No. Well, I just finished at the War Office, because I was 9 months in the War Office. See, I was living at home anyway. I suppose that was a bit of life almost, wasn't it?
How aware were you of the progress of the war elsewhere? How aware were you of the progress of the war outside of your immediate...
I'm quite sorry, yeah.
How aware were you of the progress of the war in other theatres throughout the wartime period?
Well, I was thought reasonably well off because we, as they're being static, we had newspapers. Who the heck was a girl? We had the Daily Mirror featured some girl in a cartoon. She was all the rage. Everybody looked at her. Yeah, we had news. I mean, for example, I was in the mess at Plymouth when we heard that the Bismarck had been sunk. So we knew about that almost, I would suggest, straight away. But we would have known about El Alamein, for example. Well, I suppose we followed a bit the war in Russia, for example. Well, we knew about that. We had information. I would suggest through the press. Well, they had it. I even had some information about my brother in the press, which otherwise I wouldn't have known anything about.
Was this the elder or the younger?
Younger brother. My elder brother. Well, my elder brother was in the infantry. My younger brother was in the artillery too. And he was in the Middle East. But yes, my elder brother was in Europe. But what I mean is, it was in the press, so all we ever knew about it is what we read in the press. Well, there's no other way of communication. We just didn't know.
How confident were we through the war period that the war could be won?
Right from the start. And I don't honestly believe that it occurred to me at any time that we would lose the war. I don't know why. You might say, on what grounds am I saying that? I probably hadn't got any grounds at all, but probably I'm an optimist. No, it didn't occur to me. It was just a question of how long it was all going to last. Yet when you look at 1940, June, summer of 1940, you absolutely had no reason whatsoever to expect we were going to win the war. But there again, we are an island. And that made a difference. So you take Dunkirk. Well, Dunkirk was just a blessing, wasn't it? It was a natural effect. Admiral Ramsay, he conducted the rescue by the little ships. The war went over there and brought people back from Dunkirk. I think he operated out of the operations room, which we subsequently had down under in the cliffs at Dover. That was a wonderful rescue, but it was hardly a victory, was it? Interesting. No, I don't think I was. I wasn't. I'm not pessimistic. I don't think. I mean, I wasn't in the East End of London. That's another thing. I mean, it couldn't have been very nice being in the East End of London when you had to go down to the tube stations as a refuge when the bombing started. Then you had to come out again, knowing whether your house was still going to be there. That all must have been devastating. You might not have felt quite so optimistic under those circumstances. But I don't think we were ever in a position of being bombed, or likely to be bombed. No, it's funny, it didn't occur to me that we'd lose a war. I just thought, you know, the whole thing was a damn nuisance, really, and how long was it going on for?
Did you have any idea how long it would? Did you have any idea how long it seemed that it would go on for?
No. It certainly went on longer than we thought, though. Mind you, after the war ended, it took me the best part of a year to be demobbed. Now, that's a long time. You know, I wasn't demobbed until the spring of 1946, and the war had finished in May, 45. Well, it had gone on in Burma, but it didn't quite count in one sense. I mean, it was still there, but that was a bit different, I suppose, and the atomic bomb put paid to that anyway.
Did you have any strong feeling as to America joining the war?
Any strong feelings about America? Well, the fact of the matter is, if the Americans hadn't come in, and let's be fair, we had to fight the war for 2 years before the Americans did come in. If the Americans hadn't come in, we wouldn't have won the war. I don't think we would have won it, because I don't think we could have won it. We provided a springboard, Great Britain, in Europe, to mount an invasion. We and the Canadians I think, had more troops landing on D-Day than the Americans did. The Americans probably wouldn't accept that, but I think that is a fact. But if we hadn't had the Americans, I don't think we could have conducted the war in Europe after D-Day and won. I don't think we would have had sufficient manpower somehow. Because subsequently they would have provided more of the material than we would have done. No, I don't. We had to have the Americans had to come in. Well, I mean, or we relied upon them. I don't think we could have possibly done D-Day without the Americans.
And what about the attitude towards the Russians?
It's mixed, I think. I suppose, I don't think we quite knew what to make of the Russians at one stage, but the fact of the matter is that as the war went on, they really played a mighty important role, because when you looked at the situation from Stalingrad afterwards, I mean, they were a mighty power in the East. Don't forget, they lost an awful lot more people than we did. They still managed to build up an air force, heavy tank vehicles and all this sort of thing, and slowly push the Germans all the way back from where they started. So, again, this was a major factor, obviously. It's had two fronts to fight on. You're not supposed to fight on two fronts, are you? He created two fronts for himself. No, well, okay, but probably we wouldn't have won the war without the Russians either. Would we? We aren't very big, you know. You come to think of it, not in these terms. Well, I'm not going to say we relied upon the Americans to win the First World War, but the Americans did come into the First World War in 1917, and they obviously played quite a major part. Maybe we would have won in any case. I don't know. But not in the last war. And you might say, well, why was I optimistic? Well, perhaps that's one of the reasons why I was optimistic, even though I didn't realise it or know it. But there was a lot of sacrifice. You take these North Cape convoys, fearful things they were. How many people? I knew a chap in the Navy. He actually did two North Cape convoys. I just think he must have been damn lucky to have done one. Must have been terrible, I should think. That was mainly what, taking armaments to Russia. It's the only way we could take them.
What were relations like with the ATS women in the operations room, between them and the regular?
Well, we had ATS women. They had a special enclosure in the tunnels down in Dover Castle, at their own place. They came and worked in the ops room. As far as I was concerned, they were very good. I think they were very good. You can see pictures of them next door there. All I would say is there might have been some sexual relations, if you like, but if so, I don't remember anything arising out of them or any scandals involved, but I've got a feeling that that probably happened. But that's all. Otherwise, they were nice people. And for what? You might say, well, whether they did any more than we did or not, I don't know. I suppose they had a role to play and they did it. They probably had more of a role to play in anti-aircraft because they were out in the open doing things. But all this was just plotting the information we had when it arose. down below in the panels. But I'm in touch with one, even now, the one in that picture, because when I told you I had that thing from the... No, I met her when the Optimum was reconstructed and opened to the public, and we were invited down there to the opening. I met her, had a chat with her and her husband, 60 years before. And when I saw that thing in the Spectator, I showed her, I sent her a copy of that, which she thought was rather entertaining, merely because I knew where she was and she was still alive. But not many of these people are still alive. But the Ops girls, the ATS girls, would be, because by and large they would have been younger than we would have been there. That's just a fact. But, I don't think there was any problem with them at all, overall.
Were they accepted as equal in terms of rank and responsibility? Were they accepted in terms of rank and responsibility as an equivalent man would have been?
Well, I suppose we were all officers. They weren't. They were ATS privates. So, I mean, there was that distance, in a way, between us. I mean, we didn't fraternise in any shape or form, although one of them, my friend, he was the I was instructor in gunnery. He was instructor in fire control, IFC fire control. He married one. Can you see that chair there? When we were down in Dover, he said, "Well, I'm going to see my girlfriend. She lives in Bexhill. Would you like to come along?" I don't know why the hell he wanted me to invite me to go along if he was going to see his girlfriend, but he did. And his girlfriend's father had an antique shop. Anyway, we went to Bexhill. And I think while he went off with his girlfriend, I was chatting to his father, who they had an antique shop. And he had that chair there, and I thought, well, that's quite a nice chair, and I thought I would buy it. So I bought it. It was duly shipped back to where we lived. And then Jed, I thought his girlfriend down there was rather nice, he suddenly dumped her and took up with one of the ATS girls. Married her. You know, while we're there on service, I don't know what happened to the wedding, but I went to the reception afterwards, and that was that. I always thought he was a bit stupid, because I thought the Bex Hill girl was a much nicer girl than the ATS girl he married. And she was still there. She was there when we went to this opening a few years back. Amazing, isn't it? He got in touch with me before this, and we met up. Went to some pub in Essex, and he lived over that way, and we had lunch together. And that's the first time I've seen him since the war. But, perhaps I shouldn't say that, should I?
Did you have any sense, I suppose, of the women's work during the war having any impact on their social standing afterwards?
The girls? Well, I wouldn't know, because I wouldn't have known anything about them. I didn't know very much about them, to be fair, during the war, except we were working with them. After the war, I haven't a clue. I know one or two of them married. This girl married, as I say, Owen, Jack Owen. One or two of them I know married, I think probably non-commissioned officers, that sort of thing. But what happened afterwards, I do not know. I didn't know anything about any of them, really, until we met this one with the chair. And Pam, who's in that picture, who I met at the opening of the Ops room. That's all, and that's after a very long period of time.